The new movie, Tap, is about an ex-convict who's also a former hoofer. When he gets out of jail, he's caught between two worlds, his dancer friends and his former partners in crime. Actor and tap dancer Gregory Hines stars with a supporting cast of veteran hoofers, including Harold Nicholas, Sandman Sims, Bunny Briggs, Jimmy Slide, and Sammy Davis Jr. Gregory Hines has been at the forefront of the recent tap revival. He's been dancing professionally since the age of 5, when he teamed up in an act with his brother Maurice. They performed together for the next 25 years. Hines starred on Broadway in Yubi, Coming Uptown, and Sophisticated Ladies. He broke into the movies with roles in Wolfen and the Mel Brooks comedy History of the World Part 1. In the film Cotton Club, he had a starring role as a hoofer. He co-starred with Mikhail Baryshnikov in White Nights, with Billy Crystal in Runnin' Scared, and with Willem Dafoe in Off Limits. Hines is a dancer who likes to improvise. In the new film Tap, he's given a credit for improvography.
I call it improvography because when I was working on the Cotton Club film, Francis Coppola was open to me improvising, but I realized that he needed 4 or 5 takes of a given dance before he was satisfied, and then he would choose whichever take he wanted to. And in the first take, I would improvise, and then I would discover steps in that first take, and I would include them in each succeeding tape because I wanted to make sure those steps got in the movie, and no matter which take he would select, they'd be in that take. And there was a tap dancer on the film named Ralph Brown, who he told me that he described his style of dancing as heelology because he felt he had very syncopated ideas with his heels. So I just came up with the word improvography in keeping with Ralph's description, because in effect that's really what I was doing. I was improvising and also adding in some choreographed steps.
Well, heelology sounds like it should be the study of people who are heels.
It's great. It's a great term, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it. A lot of older dancers in your new film, Bunny Briggs, Sandman Sims, Harold Nicholas. Do you think that there are big generational differences between what you grew up learning and what they grew up performing?
Not at all. I mean, there are differences. But I would say that the differences focus more on the kind of music that one likes to dance to and one feels comfortable dancing to. These great artists dance mostly to swing music and music of their era, and they relate to that kind of music. I relate to it and I enjoy the flavor of that kind of music, but I prefer to dance to more contemporary rhythms. But really, in terms of the tap hitting the wood, we all really meet on the same level at that point. For me, it was just such a great, great opportunity to work with, because these men are my heroes. They're my teachers in every sense of the word. And it was just a dream come true for me.
Gregory Hines is my guest, and he stars in the new movie, Tap. You started dancing when you were 5. What got you started?
My parents gave my brother and I, my brother Maurice and I, tap lessons. I think, like parents give their children piano or saxophone, so just something to round them out. And in those days, this is like the late 40s, I actually began at 2.5. You know, I can't imagine what I was doing at 2.5, probably just hopping up and down. But this is the family legend. I don't really remember not dancing. We took group classes at the local tap school. Somebody came by offering free lessons, and we got involved. And we liked it, and we seemed to show a little ability. So at that point, my parents found Henry Letang, who then really taught us how to dance.
I should mention he's a choreographer for your new movie as well.
Yes, he is.
Whose idea was it for you to perform professionally at such a young age? I think, was 5 the age when you started actually performing?
Yes. I think that it was just a group decision, Henry and my parents, and I suppose some of the members of the family. In those days, tap dancing was still very highly respected and an area that a lot of people wanted to be in. And the Nicholas brothers were big stars at that time, and it was Henry's contention that we would be the second coming of the Nicholas brothers. And in fact, my brother and I patterned ourselves after them. I I latched on to Harold, and my brother used his hands and danced like Fayard. And so we just started working. I mean, it was there was work, and you know, we were cute, and we could dance, and we enjoyed it.
Did you do acrobatics like the Nicholas Brothers?
A little bit, but in no way did we compare to the Nicholas Brothers in terms of the kind of acrobatic things that they were doing. We did some flips and some knee drops, we called them in those days. That's where one leg is straight and the other leg is slightly bent. Nicholas Brothers used to do complete splits, but we weren't... our style wasn't into acrobatics. We were more... tap, mostly tap and a lot of syncopated combinations.
When you were performing as a child, who kept the money?
What money?
You didn't make money when you were performing?
Well, we made money, but not much. I mean, in those days, you know, there really wasn't much money, and it was beginning to diminish as we were performing because tap dancing was beginning to go out. So there really wasn't a lot of money. I think some of those early jobs, maybe we made $25
mm-hmm.
for, you know, what was known as a club date. I remember New Year's Eve was a big night, and that performers would get paid double. So maybe New Year's Eve we'd get $50 for a club date, but there really wasn't a lot of money.
Was tap something that set you apart when you were a kid in school?
Not really, because we were professionals and from time to time had to go on the road to work, we went to professional children's schools. So I went to school with people like Patty Duke and Sal Mineo.
No kidding, really?
Sandra D. Yeah, and so, you know, we were just another professional. You know, we were just in school with, you know, kids that could relate.
Now, you did the Ed Sullivan Show when you were pretty young, right?
Yes.
How did he introduce you? What did he say?
You know, I don't remember. The only thing I remember about that is that in those days, we used to wear a lot of grease on our hair.
Uh-huh.
Because the only way to get respect in those days was to have slicked down hair. And I remember after one of the shows, as we, you know, Ed, we did our number and we came over and Ed thanked us and we took a bow and he actually put his hand on my head. And I remember just for a moment the shocked look on his face when he realized that he had at least an ounce of grease on his hand. And I thought, well, this is it. We'll never be on this show again.
And were you?
Actually, we did it one more time, but he didn't put his hand on my head that second time.
You had been dancing with your brother for many years. When you were 18, your father joined the act, and the act was named Heinz, Heinz, and Dad. At the age of 18, would you have preferred to be on your own with just your brother? Were you glad that your father joined?
I was. And at that point, it was... my father had been a musician for years, and he would be traveling in one direction, and my brother and I and my mother would be traveling in another direction professionally. And my father wanted the family to be together. And also, he felt that he wanted to show a family working together in a cohesive way. This was during the time when the black family and the was coming under a lot of scrutiny, you know, this was way before the Huxtables, where people, you know, had images where they could feel good about the black family and good about themselves. And so Heinz, Heinz, and Dad was really my father's dream in a way, and I liked it. I enjoyed it. Those were good years.
So he played and you danced?
Right, and then he would come down and do a number with my brother and I.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the 1960s, when you were performing as a family, there was really no vaudeville. There were few Broadway tap dancing musicals. Where did you perform?
Mostly nightclubs and lounges in the mid-60s, we worked Las Vegas lounges and all over the country, different lounges. And then we worked at the Playboy clubs. The Playboy clubs in those years was like vaudeville in that there was a club in each city around the country. And performers could work. There wasn't much money in it, but it was an opportunity to keep working every week and get better at one's craft. And then... in the late 60s, we made a transition to main rooms, and we began opening for stars in main rooms around the country.
How did you like that atmosphere? Did you like the showbiz atmosphere?
I did. You know, I grew up in that kind of atmosphere, and I felt very comfortable there, and around musicians and other artists, and, you know, getting a chance to work with people that I admired. I remember once we opened for Ella Fitzgerald, and it was, I mean, I was just so happy to be working with Ella Fitzgerald. We were opening for her, but Ella stipulated in her contract that we would get the same size billing on the marquee outside, and it was just such an honor to work with Ella Fitzgerald. One night we were working with her, and Cary Grant came running backstage and gave Ella Fitzgerald a big hug. And I mean, you know, it was a terrific experience just to be around a lot of these people, and I learned a lot.
Let me ask you, in the late 60s, when a more radical black consciousness was forming, was TAP considered politically retro by people who you knew?
Well,
I'm just wondering, because there was a period when TAP had a kind of reputation for being a timing kind of performance.
Well, there was a group of people that felt that way, but by that time, tap dancing had really gone out,
and
it really wasn't possible to make a living at tap dancing anymore. And in fact, Hines and Dad, we had stopped tap dancing, and we were doing jazz dances and popular dances of the time in the act. We just, I mean, people just weren't doing it anymore, so we just discontinued it. But there was a group of black people who felt that it wasn't a good image to be seen tap dancing.
Why not? I mean, where did that come from?
Well, I think that at that time, black people were really beginning to feel good about themselves, and in an effort to feel as good as possible, we're looking at all the aspects of black art and black entertainment and trying to get rid of anything that they felt was stereotypical. And so tap dancing was one of those things, and it just, you know, it got caught up in that wave. And, you know, I understood it. Even though I had been a tap dancer, I understood it. I remember growing up watching Amos and Andy, and I always loved Amos and Andy. But at that time, you know, they felt that there were a lot of people who felt that Amos and Andy was not a good thing. And so there was a big campaign to get it taken off the air, and I understood that also.
Did it get to you at all personally?
Not really, because at that point, I mean, we had just discontinued tap dancing.
And I see, right.
Uh-huh. I just figured, that was it for tap dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because of the way a group of black people felt, but also because in the entertainment business, it wasn't a viable way to make a living anymore.
So that's why you gave it up in around 71?
Right.
We were just talking about how you gave up tap in 71, about how you thought that there was really no place to perform it anymore. You moved to the West Coast for a few years. Did you stop dancing altogether, or did you just give it up professionally?
Well, what happened was that at that point, the act, Hines and Dad, I was beginning to question a lot of things at that point in my life. I was married to my first wife, and we had a daughter, and we had a nice apartment, and we had a car and a dog, and I was miserable. I was very unhappy, and it wasn't so much the marriage and my wife's fault. It was me, and I just had a lot of problems and a lot of questions. I think some of it was due to the fact that I had really been working from the time I was 5 years old, and had been in a situation where everybody was making decisions on what was going to be, and I always had somebody buffing between me and what was really happening, my parents, my manager, my agent, my publicist, my businessman. So at that point, I wanted to stop. The act broke up, and I moved to Venice, California, and I was a hippie for 5 years. And, you know, it was that time of turn on, tune in, drop out, free love. And I thought to myself, yeah. I want to do that.
When you were doing all of that, did you tell people that you used to be in showbiz, or did you keep that to yourself?
Well, I was still in it in a way. I played guitar, and sang in a jazz rock band called Severance. And it was just one of the most growthful times in my life. I discovered the joys of being a father. My first wife and I developed dynamic ways to co-parent our daughter, Daria, and she would live with me for 3 months in Venice, and then she'd go and live with her mother for 3 months on the East Coast, and that was just a terrific time. I met the woman that I'm married to now, and I learned how to take care of myself. For the first time in my life, I was on my own, and I learned how to really take care of myself and my daughter, and enjoyed playing with the band, and just, it was terrific.
What got you back into dancing again?
Well, in 1977, at that point, my daughter was in the first grade, and it really wasn't the right thing to do to pick her up every 3 months and take her out of her schedule. So she was living in New York with her mother, and I thought I was going to be able to get by with 6 weeks during the summer vacation and alternate Christmases, but I just it just didn't feel right. I felt like I was losing touch with her. So I decided to move back to New York and see what I could get into. And the very day that I moved back, my brother had his agent submit me for a musical that was auditioning. And, you know, when I talk about this, it sounds like a corny B-movie. But, I mean, this really happened. And I went to the audition. The musical was called The Last Minstrel Show, which, in fact, it turned out to be the very last minstrel show because it closed in Philly. But I got it. I went and auditioned, and I got a part in it. And the next day, when I found out I had gotten it, my brother's agent told me that I got it on the strength of the fact that the director choreographer knew that I could tap dance. Now, at that point, I hadn't had on tap dance shoes in about 8 years. And so I ran out and bought a pair just to see if I could still do it. And I got back into it. And once I started dancing again, I remembered how much I loved it and that I missed doing it.
You had to buy a pair of tap shoes? You didn't even have any left?
No. I had cut it loose. And naturally, when I dropped out, I threw out, you know, everything.
Well, you did several musicals, UB, Coming Uptown, Sophisticated Ladies. You started making films as well. I think your first film was Mel Brooks' History of the World, Part 1.
Well, that was the first film that came out. Actually, I had made Wolfen before that, but Wolfen was at that time mired in a lot of post-production problems. But it's true, History of the World, Part 1 came out first. And, you know, once I got into The Last Minstrel Show and it closed, I got very aggressive at that point because all of a sudden I was getting a paycheck and I liked it. And on a good week in Venice, in the Venice days, I made maybe $40 a week. And here I was, I think I was clearing like $275, and I was able to buy my daughter a dress and go out for dinner and send for Pamela, who at that time, you know, we were still going out, but she would come and visit. And, it was great. So I got very aggressive and, you know, I developed the ability to be aggressive right up to the point of being obnoxious.
What's one of the most aggressive things you did to get a role in a movie?
I barged into Robert Evans's home. And I was trying to get into the Cotton Club. And I had had a lot of conversations with him already. And he was, you know, he knew that I was hounding him. It was like a reign of terror that I had instituted against him. And I barged into his home, and I had my hair slicked back, and I had on like a 40s suit. And he was in his living room reading, and I just came in, and I shoved everything off of his coffee table and got up on his coffee table and danced. And after I danced, I said, you know, and that's why I should be in this movie. And then I left.
How did you get into his house?
Well, I had been there a couple of times. So, you know, I showed up. And the guy, his butler, I guess, he came to the door and he said, is Mr. Evans expecting you? And I said, expecting me? I said, you know, we have a meeting. He didn't tell you? So he let me in.
Very clever. You've been in several buddy movies. In White Nights, you're paired with Baryshnikov, and Off Limits with Willem Dafoe, and Run and Scared with Billy Crystal. in all three of those movies, it was like black actor, white actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if in movies like that, there are things that the white actors get to do that the black actors don't get to do.
Well, typically that happens. But I've been fortunate in that White Nights was developed for Mike and I. For Baryshnikov and I, and so there were things that I got to do and get in the script that might not have been there ordinarily, and also I've gone up for parts that were written white, because usually the scripts that I see that are written black, the characters don't have as much dimension as I need, and there's not a wide range of emotion for the characters. White scripts that are interchangeable, where it could be played by any man, a lot of times have more dimension to them. So I go up for those. I read them, and I try to get the part. And that's what happened in Running Scared. And it just so happened in Running Scared that the part I was right for was the guy who had the love scene, and the part that Billy was right for was the guy who had the ex-wife. And I think that had it been written for a white guy and a black guy, I don't think the love scene would have been in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just very rare that we get to see blacks in romantic and sensual and sexual situations on the screen.
What are other roles that you've gotten that were written white?
Wolfen was...
Where you played a coroner.
Yeah. Wolfen was, which was my first film, was written for a white actor. Deal of the Century... that I did with Chevy Chase, that was written for a white actor.
You say it's rare for black actors to get love scenes. Have you ever argued that a love scene should be written and included in a part?
Well, not argued, but I've certainly lobbied very heavily for it. In the Cotton Club, Lonette McKee, who she played Lila Rose, who was my girlfriend in that film, she and I both would corner Francis Coppola every chance we got and urge him to write in a love scene, and he did that. And in the film Tap, which also was another project that was developed over a two-year period, I did that with Nick Castle, who directed it and wrote the screenplay. And he was in agreement. I mean, we wanted to have a love scene and some romance and real sensuality between my character and Suzanne Douglas's character. So it hasn't been, you know, a fight, but it's certainly been something that has been important to me.
How did you learn to act? I mean, you danced all your life, you'd been performing all your life, but you hadn't been acting.
No, you know, it was just in the doing of it, and one of the most fortunate things that happened to me in my career was that my first film, Wolfen, the star of the film was Albert Finney, and I can't say enough about Albert and the way he helped me in that film, because the director, Michael Wadley, it was his first feature, and he wasn't the type of director then who would come up to actors before takes and talk to them about motivation and the character and what might be happening. And many times at the beginning of a scene, I just didn't have the slightest idea what to do. I was just concentrating on my words so that I would know what to say. And every time Albert would come over to me and he would just make suggestions to me, you know, about 5 minutes before we were ready to shoot. And it just, I mean, it made my performance, because I really didn't know what to do. And Albert really helped me. And every time I see him, I just feel so warm towards him, because he really turned me on to acting and ideas and how to do it.
Have you ever used your dance experience to help you in a stunt?
Many times. I mean, I like to do stunts, and I've done a lot of them in my films, and I have a stunt double who I've worked with in every film, really, that I've had stunts, a man named Greg Elam, and he's worked with me a lot, and anytime I have to do something that appears risky, he'll go up and test it or somehow test the rigging, and it looks to me like he's actually trying to fall. You know, he just really tests it good, and so I feel pretty secure when I do it. And he also, you know, he's able to, if I get up to do a stunt and I get frightened, he can let me down easy. He does, because, you know, stunts is a very, like, macho thing. And some people do stunts when they don't even want to do them, but it's hard for them to get up there and say, well, I don't think I want to do it. And Greg has, you know, been really good about that. And so I've been able to do stunts and sometimes do some that I was a little bit frightened of, but Greg got me through them. And sometimes I was going to do some and he just wouldn't let me, or would say, you know, I think I'd rather you not do it.
Well, I have one other dance question to ask you. I've noticed that frequently when you're dancing, you're looking down, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if you're looking at your feet.
Not actually at my feet. Sometimes I look at my feet, but not actually. Just I'm not sure what I'm looking at, and a lot of times when I'm dancing, I'm somewhat unaware of what's happening around me, and I'm not really focused on any one thing. It's just an idiosyncrasy that I have. I don't know. It's a strange feeling. Sometimes when I see a film of myself dancing, I wonder, you know, what's going on, or what was going on, or where I was looking.
Is it a stylistic thing, the difference between looking down and looking straight ahead?
I think so. You know, when I was a young boy coming up, there was a big emphasis on, you know, looking at the audience and performing and smiling, and I did it for a while, and then I didn't feel comfortable. I felt like it just felt like I was working too hard to perform, and it just seemed to me that I wasn't able to get into what I was doing. I was performing more for the people as opposed to trying to really enjoy my dancing and try to say something. And so as I grew older, I just got out of that and just developed into the style that I have now.